Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Mark Fernandez. Mark is a managing director at Sierra Ventures, a Silicon Valley-based venture capital firm focused on early-stage technology investments, specifically seed and Series A rounds. The company is on its 11th fund and has differentiated itself by staying true to its mission by staying small, staying early-stage focused, and making mostly enterprise investments. Mark and his fellow partners, Ben Yu and Tim Guler, have been together since 2002, and they bring a diverse set of backgrounds to the table. Ben is a deeply technical background, Tim was an entrepreneur, and Mark was a sales-side research analyst at Merrill Lynch. In this interview, Mark discusses the five attributes he looks for in an entrepreneur, the attributes he looks for in a company before making an investment, and we also discuss his accidental path to venture capital, the CXO board Sierra has started, the importance of investing from a bottom-up and top-down approach, and a variety of other topics. Mark Fernandez, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Thank you, Peter.
Mark, I thought we'd begin with your company. You are a partner and investor with Sierra Ventures, a venture capital firm based in Silicon Valley. And I wonder if you could provide a bit of background into Sierra Ventures and what makes it different from other members of the venture capital community.
Sure. So, you know, Sierra's been around since 1982. We're investing out of our 11th fund, and we do mostly early stage technology investing. I guess from a differentiation standpoint, there are very few firms like Sierra who are on our 11th fund who have really stayed true to our vision. You know, we've stayed small, we've stayed early stage focused, and we've done mostly enterprise investments, right? So I think that's a big thing, especially in this day and age of mega funds. We do believe that the venture business is a cottage industry to some extent. And so the results kind of reflect. The partners have been together for 17 years. So Ben, Tim, and I have been together since 2002. I was the last one to join. And then I think the final point I'd say is that we all have product backgrounds, but we approach it from very different angles because we do believe that early stage venture is about finding the next trend and being in tune with product. But if you look at our backgrounds, you know, Ben has come from a very deep tech background. Tim was an entrepreneur, and I spent time both as a product manager and on Wall Street as a sell-side research analyst. So very different approaches to product. But I would say those three things are kind of what differentiates Sierra.
I appreciate that overview. You refer to Tim and Ben. Those are Tim Guleri and Ben Yu, your fellow managing directors at Sierra Ventures. So it is, as you mentioned, the three of you, which is, as you mentioned, quite a small investment team. I know, you have additional people who work with you in operations team, other people that are involved in the investments and so forth. But in terms of the partnership itself, you talked about the advantages and differentiating factors by remaining small. Can you highlight some more of the rationale as to why you've elected to keep it such a tight-knit group?
So if you are going to do early stage investing, and when I say early stage, we're focused on seeds and Series A investments, right? And so the check sizes there are anywhere from what we call a seed investment is, you know, up to $2 million, and a Series A is up to about $6 million. So from our perspective, you know, it's very important to kind of restrict the amount of money that we put in initially into a company to keep that discipline. And so the way we look at it is the math really works. It's about $60 million per partner over a three-year period. So it's all about kind of vintage diversification, monitoring your check sizes, having the discipline around it. And so that's how it works really well for the three of us. And that's why we've kept that formula working for us.
In investing in such early stage companies, oftentimes the organization, understandably, has not developed an enormous portfolio of customers, the fuller sort of proof of the concepts that they are pursuing are not necessarily there. And so I'd imagine you have a different set of radar than your peers at other firms who typically invest in later rounds of venture investment. And I wonder, therefore, what are you looking for in those early stages in an entrepreneur to evaluate whether or not you'll make the investment or not?
Yeah. So I think there are three things, you know, Peter, that I would kind of separate into two buckets. First, I'd say, you know, the capabilities of what we're looking for in entrepreneurs, right? And the reality is, you know, the first capability is the fact that they're talking to us means they have to have that ability to raise money, not just in the early stages, but down the road, because the only thing that kills companies is running out of money. So I think we really look at that, you know, ability of an entrepreneur to be able to keep the company funded over time, right? I think the second one, which is also tied in there, is that ability to attract talent, right? So we look not only at the entrepreneur, but look at the extended team and see whether the founders have been able to attract that next layer of talent around them, which I think is absolutely critical. And then I think the third bucket is, you know, that ability to generate momentum. And momentum is defined differently. In the early stages, it's about making sure this product market fit, getting customers engaged with you. I think the second part is about, you know, getting partners engaged with you and building out the ecosystem around it and signing up customers and developing a business model. But I feel like, you know, it's about raising money, attracting talent, and generating momentum. And it's a very subjective assessment. And this is in addition to all of the regular stuff that we talk about, which is market, team, and technology. I think it's those are the three subjective pieces of it that we kind of assess. So that's the art versus the science in that, right? So I think that's one bucket. And then the little quirky things, Peter, that we look at, right? I mean, for me personally, it's the prepared mind. Has the entrepreneur walked in and reviewed not only Sierra, but my background, the kinds of investments we're making? I'm a big believer in the prepared mind. I don't think I walk into a meeting without looking at an entrepreneur's LinkedIn profile and who we know in common. Even if it just takes a couple minutes, right? It's a prepared mind. I think it's really important. And then that second part, which is the ability to tell the story, because if they can tell the story to me without slides, they can tell that story to both potential employees as well as to potential customers. I think those are the, you know, subjective parts besides that, the first three capabilities.
And to what extent is it necessary that the person has been involved in an entrepreneurial venture prior to the company that they're currently seeking funding for? Do you especially look for entrepreneurs who are on their second or third venture as a result of, or as an indication as to their track record and success in other ventures?
You know, track record is probably not the first thing I would look at, but I think the exposure, especially, and let me, you know, set the context. It's very important for enterprise focused entrepreneurs to have seen it before, right? So whether they were founders of companies is less important, but at least to have had ringside seats to a startup before, especially in the enterprise space. I think that's important to me. I think, you know, lots of founders have learned a lot from their failures versus their successes. That's great that you find someone who's, you know, this is on their second startup and the first one was successful. But the reality is that it's probably more likely to find someone who didn't have a great success. But I think on the enterprise front, I think it's really important to have seen this show before and have had ringside seats to that show. I think there's a lot of learning, a lot of mistakes that can be avoided on that. I think on the consumer front might be a little different, but I think on the enterprise front, for sure, this is important.
And how do you and Tim and Ben determine where you will invest? Or first of all, do the three of you have separate swim lanes to any degree? And then I guess more specifically to you, Mark, how do you determine what areas to focus on, what technology lanes that you'd like to spend most of your time in?
Yeah. So I think we have, Tim and I probably overlap a little bit in terms of our swim lanes. Ben tends to do the stuff that's further down the stack in the chips and systems area. And he's by far the smartest of the three of us. But, you know, the reality is that that's his swim lane slightly different. In fact, I think he sometimes swims in a completely different pool. But the reality is, for me personally, as I look at it, I kind of look at two things, Peter. I look at, is there a technology platform shift that's creating an opportunity? And I'll explain that in a second. And then the second one is there a business model innovation that's applicable to something that they're doing here, right? So let me tackle the technology platform shift. So for me, as I look at it, I say, hey, is there something around mobile that's happening that's creating a security opportunity or a management opportunity, an app development opportunity? So is something that's happening in public cloud that's creating an opportunity in security. And I'll give you some specific examples here in a second. Everybody talks about AI these days. You know, great to find some applications there, but we're looking at some data plumbing opportunities and that. So for me, is there a technology platform shift that has happened, AI, mobile, public cloud, that then drives that first, I describe it as, you know, we might not catch the pebble that falls into the pond, but we definitely should be catching that first ripple effect around it. So that's how I think about it. Is there a technology platform shift that has created an opportunity and we should be jumping on that first ripple effect? And the second part of it is the business model innovation. So I think about, you know, my very first investment I did, something called SourceFire. I was applying open source to network security. Huge disruption in a very, call it stagnant market at the time, right? And so for me, it was, you know, can you apply a business model like open source, which back in 2002, nobody knew much about, you know, and so that was my first investment because it was a business model innovation in there. And then, you know, I did our Sierra's first SaaS investment back in the day called Application Service Providers. It was an email security company. So in the perfect world, you find both a technology platform shift, but also business model innovation. But we're open to either one that can cause a disruption in the market.
And what's the chicken, the egg between identifying specific categories to investigate versus being led to those categories through the entrepreneurs that are finding their way into your office? To what extent are you looking, generally speaking, into different technology categories versus focusing on the specific companies that might be the investments of your organization?
Yeah, I think it's both top down and bottoms up, right? So I think the top down part of it is very clear, right? I mean, everybody's talking about 5G now or Industry 4.0, and so it's the thesis within those buckets, right? So if we look at 5G, I mean, should we be playing the applications? Is the timing of that right? Or is it more, you know, some of the infrastructure opportunities? Not like we're going to build, you know, the telcos will go do that, or Ericsson or whoever else, right? But for us, I think our focus is much more around kind of thinking through, we know the big trends and how do we leverage and play those trends at the end of the day. That's probably how we think about it, Peter. I mean, our view on this is the top-down portion is the thesis-based investing. The bottoms-up is making sure that we are plugged into all the best, you know, micro VCs and angel investors in particular areas, you know, whether it's in security or in, you know, mobile or whichever areas. And there are a lot of specialized funds in each of these areas, making sure we're very plugged into what they're doing, all the entrepreneurs in these sectors, right? So I feel that we have to approach it from both sides, and it goes back to what we said about the prepared mind. You have to have both the top-down and the bottoms-up approach to it.
And from a top-down perspective, what are some of the ways in which you remain abreast of trends that are rising or falling, as the case may be? You talked about, of course, your ecosystem of angel investors, micro VCs, others in the technology community. I'm curious, how do you complement that with what you read, other people whose counsel you seek on a regular basis, and so on?
Yeah, I think you said two things in there. It's read and listen, right? So I think it's the reading part was my background. It was, you know, Wall Street sell side research analyst, right? So my job was to make sure that, you know, I was totally abreast with for all the activities that were happening in a particular space, right? So for me, it's, you know, I read a lot. I think I probably get an hour and a half of reading before my day starts, right, at work. So I think it's really important to kind of, but it's, I'm very picky about what I read, right? Because there's a lot of noise out there. And so it's all about finding the right technology trade rags, the right folks like you, right, who are abreast of the trends. And so I feel like that's the reading part of it. But then on the listening part of it, one of the things we've created at Sierra is the CXO Advisory Board, which we'll talk about. But, you know, we've got about 75 Fortune 2000 CXOs, and you know, they run tens of billions of dollars of IT budget, right? Whether it's in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space, or whether it's in consumer products or in manufacturing, they know they're the front line, and we get really good feedback from them which we can also translate to our entrepreneurs. But I think at the end of the day, it's read and listen. And for me, the reading part is the proactive piece of it. The listening part is it's a skill that you have to develop. Given what we do for a living, we tend to talk more than we listen. I feel like with our CXOs, it's really, really important to listen to what they have to say, because the nuances in the details in there. So those would be the two things I'd say, Peter.
That's excellent. And I'm grateful to have participated in your CXO Advisory Board event that you hold in the fall each year, and had a chance as a result of that to see the power of the network that you've developed. I wonder if you could take a moment more. I think I'm going to paint with a broad brushstroke here, Mark, but I think for the closer a chief information officer is to Silicon Valley, the more de rigueur it is to them, and more apparent that it is that the VC community is an important part of their ecosystem, and that it's very much symbiotic, that a venture capitalist like yourself wants the insights, just as you mentioned a moment ago, just as it's beneficial to the CIO to understand where smart money is being spent and why. And I wonder if you could take a moment to talk about your own exposure to and your own interactions with CIOs, especially as oftentimes the people within large enterprises who control the purse strings and make decisions as to what technologies to invest in. And likewise, maybe you take a moment and talk about how maybe if there are people who are interested in getting involved in your CXO advisory board, how they might do so.
Yeah, sure. So I think, the purpose of starting the CXO board was completely selfish, right? So we invest in early stage startup companies. The hardest thing for them, besides recruiting talent, is getting feedback. And I'm not saying, someone needs to buy the product initially, but getting feedback that they're building the right product. So for us, selfishly, it was all about giving our entrepreneurs access to a few customers, right? And when we started this, when I started this in 2004, 2005, it was, five local CIOs, Cisco and DHL and WebEx, because it was separate from Cisco, and a few of those folks. And it's grown into, we have about 75 CIOs and CTOs and CISOs from all these different areas, in different verticals, right? And so part of this was really to provide entrepreneurs access to some of the smartest minds that are out there that have a lot of dollars to put to work and are looking for the cutting edge stuff. But that's a one-way street, and that doesn't last too long. So one of the fundamental premises, and probably very different from many of the other funds that have then followed on and started CIO boards, one of the big things, the number one rule with my partners here was, let's not flog our wares to the CIOs, right? It really is about these CXOs. They spend 98% of their time fighting fires, and the 2% of the time that they stick their head out of the sand, we want to be the place that they come to, right? And so some of the relationships that we've built with, the Merck CIO and the GSK CTO have extended beyond, the current jobs, right? If I think about Jim Schofield from Merck now, he was CTO at Coke, CIO at Nike, now CIO at Merck, Karen Anterell, CIO of Walmart to, CTO at GSK. They've maintained relationships with us for many, many years because of kind of what they get out of our CXO advisory board. We really do believe it's really important that this is a two-way street. It's not just about us, promoting our companies to them, but them kind of getting a lot of value out of, discovering what's out there. So that's one of the fundamental premises that, we formed the board, and we've kept it very true to that form right now. And then your second part of your question, which is in terms of how they get involved. Look, most of the folks on our CIO board have been referrals from other people. It really has been some of the folks who've been with us for a while telling their friends, like, hey, look, now with this new role, you should join, the CIO, CXO advisory board at Sierra. So it's really, we haven't gone out and recruited anybody, but they can either reach out to you or, email me. And that's the easiest way to get involved with the Sierra CXO advisory board.
Excellent. Thank you for mentioning that. Earlier, as you were highlighting off the top of your head a couple of different trends that at least immediately came to mind, you were talking about 5G, Industry 4.0. I don't know if those come to mind because they are areas where you are delving particularly deeply right now, but whether those two or others, I wonder if you could take a moment and discuss a couple of or a few different areas in which you are currently delving deeply, and maybe if you're so inclined, offer some thoughts on how that investigation has led to investments in those spaces.
Sure. So the way we think about it here at Sierra, Peter, is that we kind of split it up into what we call core areas that we've, you know, built expertise over many, many years, and then what we call frontier technologies, right? So if you go into the core areas, you think about security or data or vertical applications, right? So let's pick data, for example. I'll give you a few anecdotes along the way. When back in the day, we did a Teradata, right? Then maybe a few years later, we did a company called Greenplum, which was acquired by EMC, and that was in the MPP space. And then we just sold a company called Treasure Data to Arm, and Treasure Data was a streaming data company. And we've got a company now called Zaloni, which is in the data management platform, so data lake related technologies. So there's a strong theme, a strong focus along the way in terms of how we think about data. Same thing with security. You know, my first deal was a company called SourceFire. We funded Marty in his mom's basement. You know, that company went on to a $2.7 billion acquisition by Cisco, but that was open source applied to network security. The bookends of that was we just sold a company in the public cloud security space called RedLock to Palo Alto Networks, and that's the core fundamentals of Palo Alto's cloud security strategy. So, you know, those are the core areas for us that we feel like, whether it's data and certain applications, whether it's HR, whatever, they've been, you know, the building blocks of Sierra's success, right? And then we kind of look at, when I say vertical applications, well, you know, some areas emerge, right? So if you think about healthcare, if we had this conversation 3 years ago, we had not done much in healthcare at all. If you look at just the last 6 months, we've made two healthcare IT investments. Now, we're never going to do molecules or something that we need a PhD in biology, but we will look at how do you apply software to healthcare problems or data to healthcare problems. And those are the kinds of companies that, you know, we're focused on. We did it. So we made a couple of investments. One's not yet announced yet. The other one's in the digital pathology space. But, you know, we're kind of looking at the evolution of vertical SaaS solutions into new areas. And I think healthcare is going to be, you know, a golden goose for the next, 10 years. 20 years of investing. So we're spending a lot more time. We did a very thorough analysis, spoke to a lot of players in the space, and emerged. So healthcare IT has probably gone from being a frontier technology for us 3 years ago to kind of a core focus area. So I think, you know, in that spectrum of core to frontier, things evolve. In the frontier space, 5G today might be frontier. Robotics might be frontier. But, you know, 3 years from now or 4 years from now in our next fund, it'll probably be part of the core. So that's how we think about it and kind of look at the evolution of things that go from frontier to core. But things like security and data and all always going to be core for us because they're going to be applied to different areas.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You alluded to a couple of times your own personal background as a product manager, as a Wall Street sales side research analyst prior to going into venture capital. And Mark, having known you for a while, I know the very interesting story about, as you put it, your accidental the accident that led to you becoming a venture capitalist. And I wonder if you could tell that story.
Yeah, I'm an accidental VC, I guess, to some extent. But, you know, you know, people ask me, you know, how did you get into the venture business? They always want to look for tips. And I think, honestly, the venture business is very fragmented in terms of the diversity of folks who are here, right? I mean, if you kind of just even look at the three of us, Ben's a deep technologist, Tim, very successful entrepreneur, you know, done two very successful companies. And then my background, you know, is product management. So where I started out was I was a robotics guy, actually, from Berkeley. I did my master's in robotics there. did a startup company, then went to a couple of big companies, Seagate and Cisco. And then I thought I was going to go back to Cisco after business school and ended up on Wall Street. And it was all about the food that the Wall Street banks offered. And it was, you know, I ended up joining a firm called Robertson Stephens, which was one of the tech preeminent tech banks at the time, and then got recruited to Merrill Lynch. And, you know, I was very, I was lucky and successful at Merrill covering software as a sell-side research analyst. And one of the companies we took public was Sierra. And that's back in 2002, late 2001, early 2002, I had the opportunity to come to Sierra. And that's, so there wasn't a planned path. I didn't know what an investment bank was when I was in business school, when I started business school. I didn't know what a VC firm was really, you know, I was just focused on what I was doing. So it really was an accidental VC path to here.
Very interesting. Well, Mark Fernandez, thank you so much for joining me on Technovation, sharing some of your perspectives on where you see the technology landscape evolving, the things that are exciting you, especially those exciting you enough to invest, and sharing a bit about your career. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Sri Lakshmi Kohli, the Chief Information Officer of Align Technologies.